Hello, everyone, and welcome to TechNet Radio. My name is Kevin Remde, and I'm a senior technical evangelist on the U.S. Developer Experience team at Microsoft, and I'm your humble TechNet Radio host today. Now, today's discussion is third of a five-part series. We're expanding upon various aspects of enterprise device management, and the idea is to be able to better support a mobile-first world that we're living in. So in this series, we introduced you to the topic in part one, and in part two, we covered the aspects and importance of managing identities, both for users and devices. But knowing who the user is and what they're authenticated for isn't enough. We need to consider the options we have then for managing and restricting or allowing access to our managed applications and data. Now, Blaine, shouldn't we just allow anyone to access our company's line of business applications and the company confidential information?
Absolutely not, Kevin. Let's go there.
Yes, right. Well, by now you've noticed that I'm not alone here. This is my teammate and good friend, Blaine Barton. Blaine, introduce yourself.
Thanks, Kevin. Yeah, I'm Blaine Barton. I'm a senior technical evangelist here out of Tampa, Florida, and work on all, you know, private, public, cloud-based technologies, including Microsoft Azure, Microsoft Intune, Office 365. So, welcome, everybody. Let's get started.
Yeah, let's do it.
So as we did together in part one, Kevin, you and I, it's going to be a little different in the sense that neither one of us is the full-time interviewer or interviewee. So we do have a simple outline of topics we want to cover today. So let's just kick it off, Kevin. What do you think?
All right. Very good.
So let's talk about application and data security. Why do we need application and data security?
Well, you know, I think all of our viewers that have been in the industry for any amount of time know that it's about information. Certainly, we are IT professionals, which stands for information technology, and the information that we're managing is on behalf of our companies, on behalf of our businesses. And we've had to deal with where that information resides, whether it's at rest on storage, whether it is in motion as moving between different applications, or in use as an application actually working with that data. And with all of that in place, The number of variables that we have to deal with regard to that data, of course, increases because now we have not just the information, but also the applications that are being used, the users, as we talked about in the section on identity, the users and the devices being used to access that data. And so it becomes a really difficult thing to rein in because data can be all these different places at once and with all these different types of access and with different requests from different users, it becomes a big challenge. So that's why this is important to talk about in this case, in the context of enterprise device management and managing information. How do we do that? How do we protect the applications? How do we restrict or allow access to the applications? And then the data that the user is using for those applications or even just simply storing on their device, do we allow them to store company confidential information on their personal device in this whole bring your own device scenario? And that kind of brings up another topic with regard to that data being saved on a device, and that is encryption. I mean, and there's some good technologies out there. What is Microsoft doing to protect data on a device at rest?
Well, that's a great question, Kevin. You know, we talk about disk encryption or full disk encryption. We're talking about, you know, all this going mainstream. So, you know, traditionally, we kind of look back a little bit. Traditionally, in Windows, you needed to buy the Windows Enterprise edition to get access to the encryption capabilities. But that all changed in Windows 8, and going forward, of course, with Windows 10, and we moved to BitLocker. We moved it down into Pro, and then we added device encryption, which is huge for the RT and Windows Phone 8. So those were big, big steps forward. And then, you know, Kevin, as we know, the reality is that disk encryption is really a fundamental OS feature. You know, we need in all devices, especially around in today's bring your own device trend that's going on now. So the challenge with this is that some of the devices that we have are a little bit older, right? Not all devices are capable of running the disk encryption solution in a secure and performant way. So what we've done is we've kind of said and take a look back, and now with 8.8.1 and with going forward with the other operating systems of the future, we're looking at all devices, at least Windows certified devices, be included in those hardware characteristics to have or require the disk encryption included in all editions of Windows going forward. So so when we talk about, you know, device encryption, it's available automatically in the OS provision for us. What we kind of refer to back in the day is connected standby or instant go devices, which is a Microsoft specification, a Windows 8, around aiming around the smartphone type power management capabilities to the whole PC platform, which is exciting. So as at the same time, really increasing that physical security around the footprint. You know, we talk about BitLocker. BitLocker has been around for a while, Kevin, right? Mm-hmm. And the device encryption in general. So we look at, you know, how do these two kind of, how are they similar and how are they different, right? So, you know, what's the difference between device encryption and BitLocker? So when we look at, you know, device encryption in general, it's based on BitLocker, right? So it's provided a commercial grade encryption just like BitLocker does. I think what really makes them different is the ability that BitLocker has included features to make it manageable within a business environment as we're managing all these devices with BitLocker on them. You know, one difference is that on the storage devices, for example, when we added in the USB thumb drives or BitLocker to go. So that was a huge improvement, not only to have BitLocker on like C volume, then we became available with BitLocker to go on the USB drives and now multiple drives within the system. I think it's important to note that, you know, even if we do lock down and do drive encryption or BitLocker, it is known that, you know, if you wish to use a third-party encryption solution, you can disable a lot of that automatic device encryption on these devices. But really, I think, you know, that's a big improvement to moving forward, is to make sure that all of our drives are encrypted, both on a phone and or a handheld PC or device. So, and of course, we can manage all that using our tools like the Microsoft BitLocker administration and monitoring tool to be able to manage, you know, your encryption keys and your devices in that environment. We also support the Federal Information Processing Standard, that FIPS. So it's the standardization is developed around the United States federal government for use in computer systems, you know, to lock down data. So there's a lot, you know, going on there with drive encryption and BitLocker in general. So what do we got about, you know, we've heard about measured boot, trusted boot, Kevin. What's going on with that environment today?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, a lot kind of along the same lines of BitLocker, being able to protect a device and protect the data on the device. Let's protect the device itself. Let's limit what can be installed on there, or I guess more correctly, what can be injected there that could be malicious. And, you know, in the past we've had BIOS, and BIOS is a great solution, but unfortunately BIOS can be overwritten, BIOS can be manipulated and programmatically. And so we have a trusted boot, the Unified Extensible Firmware Interface, that is a standard that provides a trusted boot environment. It's a replacement for the traditional BIOS, and of course hardware need to support that. There's a certification that's required in order to make that happen, and Windows 8.1 support that natively. So UEFI, as we pronounce it, supported devices can actually take advantage of this trusted environment and the security benefits from that. You know, being able to, and supported by Windows 8, supported by Linux, eliminates the boot kit threats that are out there, and helps secure the boot process. You know, along with that and the boot process, it's funny. I don't think a lot of people know that Windows 7 is actually vulnerable to injections into the boot process. You know, we know that there are modules that run before any anti-malware software runs once the operating system is up and running. And so there's an OS loader that has to run. There's anti-malware software that can actually be installed as a part of the process to help protect the system. But in either of those cases, those pieces of code could actually be modified. And so what we did in Windows 8 and 8.1 and beyond is being able to actually know that the boot process is trusted. We can actually see, because these bits of code are actually certified, and we know and we can tell if the code has been modified before actually running it. And if it has, we can actually automatically remediate. So we actually replace the modified code with the original code, and we can continue to do that, you know, continue to keep it secured. And we can actually measure that as well. So if you are a large security organization and you have machines that you're responsible for, you can actually track them, and they can actually report back if they've actually detected that there's been something malicious. And so these organizations can actually then see on the whole, even in a global sense, hey, there's a big outbreak of a certain type of malware that's been modifying bootloaders, and we can actually see that. And the good thing is, of course, those machines, even before being infected, or after, I guess, after being infected, but could actually, before the operating system runs, can actually remediate and fix the problem. So it's a really, really nice solution we have going forward with Windows 8 to do this remote attestation and to be able to remediate problems even before they infect the system once the operating system's loaded. Now, along with the idea of information on your device, I mean, all these people with all these approved devices that are their own device, but you've approved them with application and data and access and saving storage on their own devices and so on. You know, what happens if that user or that person leaves the company? What options do we have? They're going away with all this data and these applications and the access to them on their device. Is there a solution for that, Wayne?
Well, there is, Kevin, and I'm glad you asked that, because that's been a big issue. But I've been talking with customers in the field about, you know, bringing devices in. We know it's the real world, Kevin. We bring other devices in that aren't corporate assets, and unfortunately for the security side of things. So, you know, it's oftentimes I'll talk to folks, I'm like, do you bring other devices into work? And they're like, well, yeah, I bring my own phone. Or I bring another secondary laptop, put it in the desk next to me. So I can kind of, you know, I can work on the computer and then shut the desk after, you know, my boss walks by or what have you. But it's always been, you know, joining that device to the domain, it's all in, right? Or it's all or nothing. And now with the remote business data removal, or as we refer to as selective wipe, we can now have the capabilities or the ability, if you will, to revoke access to corporate on a device when a user is leaving the organization if they're using their personal device. So we call this RBDR. And there's some application programming interface or APIs on both the client and server side to make this happen. So how it works is the server uses the API to set policy. And as we know, a policy governs what a user or a computer can or cannot do. And it is for that client app that when asked will encrypt data being sent from the server to the client using EFS. So for instance, a perfect example of this would be Exchange, right, Kevin? So Exchange and Exchange Active Sync policy, you know, to instruct the mail client to encrypt the data, and then EAS can then use to revoke access to the mail. So, you know, the mail client, for instance, in Windows 8 has also been implemented such, and then when an attachment are saved outside of the mail container, for instance, they remain encrypted. And it's kind of cool because they're actually wipe-enabled, if you will, along with the mail container where you can wipe that stuff when the time comes. So that's great technology. Like mail wipe command. When we use the mail wipe command, EAS is used for that.
So it's basically based on the application, how it was installed on the device will determine whether or not it's a company-owned application, company-managed application. And if we do a selective wipe, those applications built for the APIs, as described in the RBDR, Remote Business Data Removal Protocol, wipe not only themselves, but also any data associated with them, because it's protecting it that way. That's great.
That is correct. And also the Open Mobile Alliance Device Management Work Group, that whole protocol, or the OMA, DM protocol, if you get really specific there. But what that means is adding that technology in also gives the ability to do things like wipe work folders, right? So do the wipe command on work folders, and that all comes through the new OMA DM protocol. So yeah, great stuff coming. I mean, it's now we can have kind of the luxury of having devices that are personal, adding them into, you know, things like, and having the ability to have things like work folders, being able to access corporate information if the device is lost, stolen, or that person leaves the company, you know, we can go ahead and wipe that data remotely. So some great technology there. You know, I talked about work folders. You know, talk about work folders. I mean, they have their place in the technology and our infrastructure. So you want to talk a little bit about work folders, Kevin?
Yeah, it is it's a great technology that's a part of Windows. So it is Windows 7, Windows 8, Windows 8.1, 8.1 update. It's not yet. I don't know what their plans are. I know that it had been demonstrated, but it's not yet available for iOS or Mac or Android. But The idea being, it's very much, and I like to describe it as very much like OneDrive. Thinking about a storage location that is somewhere else. But in the case of work folders, as opposed to OneDrive, OneDrive, of course, is stored in the public cloud, and then OneDrive for Business as well, in the cloud, right? Yeah. Using the hands. I can't talk about the cloud without the hands. Work folders are stored in the corporate data center. So whereas we have, you know, OneDrive is, of course, in someone else's cloud. You know, the user doesn't really care where that data is, except as IT professionals, we care. We manage that. So you actually have that location in the data center managed as another feature of Windows file services, essentially. But the idea being, for the end user, they have multiple devices running Windows. They can actually connect to and use those documents from multiple devices, and it's kept in sync. It's all managed that way. It's managed so that it can be used on non-domain joined devices, at least in terms of Windows 8 and 8.1. Windows 7 does have to be domain joined in order to make that happen, and there is an additional piece that you have to install on Windows 7. But beyond that, now you have this shared copy of data that can be used on multiple devices, kept in sync, used offline, which is also very important. And the minute they reconnect to those synchronizations, any updates that have happened for versions of files, either in the central store or on those individual devices, will be kept in sync. So it's a pretty slick way to have and be able to support mobility, at the same time as IT, being able to manage corporate resources centrally, as we always want to do, and have the same benefits of a file system, where we have the ability to set access control and do antivirus checks and do backup and restore if we need to. So there's a number of things, of course, that we can do, and apply rights management to those documents. So that becomes very important, and work folders is a pretty cool technology for that. Now we're talking about app and data protection in this section, of course. When I think about the information that's on a device, you kind of have to think of it in different layers. I mean, because there's the device itself that we have to protect. There's applications, and then there's the data. Describe that a little bit. What do we have available to us, or what should we consider when we're looking at mobile data protection and the different aspects around that?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's a huge consideration. We talk about mobile device management. When we look at mobile device lockdown, right, locking that device down. So there are different layers. There's three layers that we can talk about today. You know, one of that first layer is that protects the corporate data layer, right, by restricting device behaviors. And there's a whole list of different behaviors and different policies and things that we can do. You know, PIN reset, encryption, wipe the device, disable the screen, or be able to disable the screen capture, do cloud backups, track compliancy. So there's a lot there, including, you know, things like provisioning the credentials that enable, you know, corporate resource access control. So there's a big piece. So gaps, you know, you kind of leave it open, right? Because you think, you know, apps may share corporate data and other apps outside of your IT infrastructure and control. You know, apps may save corporate data to consumer cloud services, right? You kind of got to mix and match here. But yeah, the most important one is that I would refer to as that layer one. The next one would be the application and data container, right? Through what we refer to as managed mobile productivity. So when we look at layer two, you know, preventing apps from sharing data other than apps outside the IT control and infrastructure, you know, preventing applications from saving data to stores outside of IT control, encrypting that data on the pipe or across the path of supplemental device encryption mechanisms. So these are all these things that we want to consider. But there's also, yet, as we kind of parlay in from layer two to layer three, applies the same protection to all data that the app touches, right? So when we talk about that third layer, you know, data wrapping, if you will. So with data wrapping, you know, protect your corporate data by really encapsulating a granular layer around that content in specific protection around the application. You know, that's kind of a developer play, but things like time bomb vision docs or having a way to protect all the data in that application by wrapping some layers of protection around it. So yeah, once again, you know, kind of you can look at device and then the app and the data layer itself, you know, as we know, Kevin, there's lots of different levels of security, lots of different layers of security as we've taught in past TechNet events. Around, you know, the perimeter network, from the physical layer to the cabling to the IPsec to all the policy laid down. So this is kind of taking and peeling back the onion, if you will, around the mobile data protection. And once again, those three layers.
Yeah, for sure, on a device level. And as you said, I think it's really, really interesting. If you consider the implications of taking an application that you're running and copying to the clipboard some data, and you know, maybe you're in Excel, and Excel was installed because you are a member of this company. The company has pushed Excel to you through Intune as provision through Configuration Manager, and now you have this company managed application. Well, you copy some cells from that Excel, that company confidential Excel spreadsheet, and you try to paste it into some other application that wasn't company managed, was personal application, and lo and behold, the paste option isn't even there. And it's not there because you're trying to take company information into a non-company managed application. So it's really powerful technology. And as you said, yeah, developers need to support that. New applications have to support that. And of course, Microsoft's applications that we're publishing now that way do support that. Hopefully more and more will continue to do that.
Well, you know, let's talk about that, Kevin, because one of the things I think we should talk about now, it might be a good time, is the RMS, right? So the Azure RMS, like you're talking about protecting data, being able to, you know, if you get email, not being able to forward that particular, you know, piece of email based on its confidentiality. So, yeah, you want to talk about RMS? That's a good time to talk about it.
Yeah, definitely. Because as you mentioned, layer three, that's where the encryption follows the document or is a part of that piece of information as it goes from place to place or as it's stored somewhere. And we've had RMS, Remote Rights Management Service, for a long time. It's actually been a part of Active Directory for a long time. And so we've used it in the context of domain environments where those directory servers are available and can answer those questions of, okay, this person, do they have rights? Yes, they do. Okay, we'll grant them access. Or, no, they don't. We won't decrypt that document, and that document is useless. That Word document, that Excel document, whatever, can't be opened by this particular person because they're not part of that authenticated group. Well, we can extend that, actually. So think about that. I mean, this document, going wherever it goes, has information in it that says only these people are allowed to access it. So if I'm outside the company, I have no access to that. Well, let's go outside the boundaries of our domain for a second and think about bring your own device, or think about that time when you're sitting in Starbucks on your iPad and you want to access that Word document, but you're not connected to the corporate domain. You're not connected to the corporate network. You're not even VPN connected in there. So there's no way you have access to the Active Directory servers in order to authenticate. What happens then? What's great about Rights Management Service today is that we actually have it supported in Azure. So we can actually extend our rights management into the Microsoft Azure Rights Management Service, a cloud-based service that allows us to extend rights management for Exchange, for SharePoint access, for document access. So now I can access a document. I don't care where it's stored. It can be stored in some other cloud somewhere. But that encryption, again, it follows and is part of that document. Will say, are you who is allowed to access to this? Give me your, you know, credentials. And those credentials are checked in Azure Active Directory, checking then down again to the corporate directory and allowing basically anywhere in the globe you have access to the internet, you're able to authenticate. And if you are trusted and known to be trusted through that, then you have access to the document. If you don't, then you won't. So it's really taking what was a really great idea and has been around for a few years, but extending it into the cloud, taking advantage of the power of Azure Active Directory and its integration with my corporate directory and granting or denying access to documents and rights on a global sense. Very, very powerful stuff.
That's one of the things I'm working on a lot now too, Kevin, is Azure Active Directory and software as a service is one of the things I'm kind of working on a project right now. It's exciting.
I want to ask you about that because you told me something about that, but let's talk about that because that's a part of this. And it's not just for the sake of authentication for these kinds of document access, but we can use Azure Active Directory for, I guess the biggest way people use it is for Office 365, right? That is the authentication engine for Office 365. But people don't know this yet, and you're going to describe it. We can actually use it for other things. Is that right?
Yeah, that's actually correct. I'd like to go in kind of a little bit deeper on that. You know, it's your directory on the cloud or in the cloud. Are we on the cloud or are we actually in the cloud? I've always asked that question. You know, as people say, well, I'm now on the cloud. Well, are you? Are you physically sitting at the data center, or are you putting your data in the data center? So it's always interesting to me in some of the discussions we have with folks out there that that go to a lot of our events in the field. But, you know, your directory on the cloud, you know, connecting your, you know, whether it's connecting line of business applications or software as a service, and having just apps in the public cloud on our Microsoft data center, you can do authentication Azure Active Directory in Office 365 and have a seamless integration of your single sign-on and federation of all your apps and keeping them all in the cloud. When I say in the cloud, I mean in our data centers. So if your enterprise, and it doesn't need to be, this is the fun part about it, in the technology that we're learning and continuing to eat, live and breathe in this mobile first, cloud first world is it doesn't matter for small business, medium business, you know, if your enterprise, for instance, uses cloud-based software as a service like Office 365 or a custom line of business application, you know, you can have not just integration with your on-premises private cloud Active Directory, but you can also have and do things like password sync and dir sync and use tools to get the credentials from your users from Active Directory on-premises up into Azure Active Directory and use as well as Office 365 and other applications. So, you know, and getting that single sign-on to those applications. So Azure Active Directory sign-in gives both IT pros, and when we talk about IT pros, we're really talking about the users in which they support, as well as developers, let's not forget about the developers, a way to, and it really for the sign-in part for the developers, really nice if they're building custom applications. So it gives developers, you know, a way to avoid a separate ID and password for their application. So users get the single sign-on access across the application and other applications like in Office 365. So, and what's nice is, you know, support a lot of those standard protocols such as SAML or SAML 2.0, the WS Federation and Open ID Connect make it possible for sign-in and various platforms like .NET, of course, Java, Node.js, and PHP, to name a few. So as we look at, you know, what I'm working on right now is, at this point, you know, I got to highlight the Azure Active Directory can also really provide a solid identity management for cloud and solutions. You know, I mean, we talk a lot about public cloud, which is software as a service with Office 365, or if you look at building applications and using services, then you use a Microsoft Azure if you're using mobile device management or devices in your infrastructure, and we look at Microsoft Intune. So when we look at Office 365 and Microsoft Intune, or subscription per user, page kind of as you go per subscription, those are really software as a service. And then we talk about Azure, where we build apps in Azure using the components of different development platforms, then we have a custom application. So either way, they need access, users need access through single sign-on those applications. So what's kind of cool, Kevin, is you could have an application that you could get right from the gallery. There's hundreds of applications maybe I'll have an opportunity to actually show you in a demo here.
There's thousands of applications.
Yeah.
Then what you're getting at is the fact that you know think about IT having to deal with shadow IT. Shadow IT being that concept of, you know, some department in your organization decided, you know, I heard about this great cloud solution for our accounting or our payroll or whatever, and managing our CRM, and so I went ahead and created a whole bunch of user accounts and passwords, and now my team is all on this. And did IT know anything about that? No, they didn't, unfortunately.
Right.
So they went around IT in order to gain access to this third-party software as a service application. What you're describing with Azure Active Directory is being able to tie that in so that I can use the same authentication, the same user accounts and passwords, and so my user with a single sign-on can also now have granted or denied access to that software as a service application, that other application that typically would have needed a new user account and password, so that you know, someday if they leave the company or if they change departments or whatever, they for whatever reason they no longer need access to that, all you have to do is change their group membership somewhere, and they're denied access to that application.
Yeah, you bet. Pre-integrated, right? Pre-integrated, yeah. Easy to add SaaS apps, line of custom business, line of business applications in Azure. Hey, Kevin, you want to see what I got going? You talked about payroll and accounting. I just have two software as a service apps that I pulled down from Azure. You want to take a look at what I got?
Yeah, sure. We only have a couple minutes left, but sure, we'll do that.
Okay, we'll do a quick demo. So, hey, Kevin, here's my Microsoft Azure portal. I'm in here under blainbarthotmail.com. I got a couple of different tenants here. But if I go down to Active Directory, what I want to show you is the Active Directory integration with the applications that you can pick from the thousands of apps you mentioned earlier. You see I've got three directories here. So I have a couple of apps installed under SSLC. So I'm going to go in there and you'll see I can add users and groups and apps. And if I go ahead and I click on applications here, you'll see that I've got QuickBooks Online, Office 365, SharePoint Exchange Online. These aren't enabled yet. Then I also added the ADP Payroll Work Center here. So you see you got QuickBooks Online here. But down here, if you click on Add, this is where you can go ahead and add the application. So add an application my organization is developing or add an application from the gallery. If I click on the gallery, Kevin, here's where you're talking about. Look at all these apps. Look at all these apps.
2,457 apps as of today. That's amazing. That number goes up every time I look at this.
That is crazy, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, like IT infrastructure, you click on there, then we can go and have access to AirWatch, for example. So we can dig in there. And if I go up here, you know, like I use the example of QuickBooks. So if I go into QuickBooks and I click on, you know, searching for that, you'll see that I have QuickBooks Online and it says it's already been added. So, but let's go ahead and look at that. If I go into QuickBooks and I click on the little finger here and I open this up and open up the QuickBooks panel area, you'll see that the app's been added where I can configure single sign-on. So if I click on single sign-on, it'll say password single sign-on or existing single sign-on. So this one would support, you know, the Active Directory Federated Services or third-party providers. Or here we just use the AD credentials or you could sign in as another user. So basically, you know, assigning users. I click on assign users here. And you'll see, and there's also the ability to look at my users, add the users, and here you'll see that there's admin blainbarr@hotmail.com. So that's good. And then if I wanted to
you can add users here directly because this is just your user list, or you could, this could be coming from your synchronized set of users from your Active Directory in your data center.
Yep, you bet. Over here on users is where you'd go, and you'd go ahead and add the users here. And then once you have the users in, and you have your application provisioned here, then you could go into the app itself, and then that's when you would go ahead and come down here to the users. So go to the users here, mm-hmm. Okay, and then add them in. So that's the Active Directory side. If I go back to what we call the Access Panel extension, so what makes it available is kind of the dashboard, right? So I go to myapps.microsoft.com. And I can go ahead and provisions this Azure kind of this dashboard of applications. You'll see up here my directory listing is up here. If I go to SSLC, then it'll go ahead and show me what apps have been published. At this point, you do need to have, like QuickBooks Online, you have to have QuickBooks Online actually set up as a subscription through Intuit. But if I click on that, what it's going to do, it's just going to go ahead and redirect those credentials in Active Directory and give me access to my QuickBooks application. So that's, I want to just show you that, you know, as we get to the point where I can go in here and I can provision all my stuff for the QuickBooks, go ahead and sign out here. But use the Access Panel to access those applications like ADP or what have you. For instance, if I was set up here, I could have the username and password and authenticate right into those applications. So just wanted to give you kind of a quick demo on that, Kevin. Once again, thousands of applications are available and doing this custom panel through Active Directory.
And it falls right in with the topic today, which is protecting the access to applications and using a tool like Azure Active Directory and cloud-based authentication. Very good.
Absolutely. All right. Well, thanks.
Great demo, Blaine. Thank you for showing that. That's awesome stuff. So as I mentioned earlier, this is the third part of a five-part series on supporting a mobile-first and cloud-first world, we're talking about the mobile-first piece. We've covered identity management. We've covered application and data protection today. Our final two parts, our teammates are going to go into greater detail on device management as well as options for granting application access in those cases where maybe the user doesn't want any company management of their device. So, Blaine, again, thank you so much for your time. Great stuff.
Thanks a lot for having me, Kevin. I always enjoy these TechNet Radio episodes, so thanks.
You bet. And we'll see you all again very soon for another edition of TechNet Radio, supporting a mobile-first world.
See ya.